Yeah, okay, so we're going to move to item number 20.
Mr. Chair, I think...
What's that? Okay.
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay, I think we fixed our technical problem. We're ready to get started.
Okay, are we ready, Dominic?
We are. I thought Ken had some comments before me.
Ken? Okay, folks, we're going to resume our meeting. Mr. Harris, some comments?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Got me all straight here.
Okay.
That looks so.
Okay, this is item 20. Item will be, we will bring you every year. This is the status of Central Coast LID initiative. Waterboard staff Dominic Rock will provide some initial comments, and then Central Coast LID initiative director Dr. Darla Inglis will provide a brief summary of some of the LID initiative accomplishments this year and the direction the project is headed in the future. Before I hand it over to them, I want to mention that several waterboard staff recently toured LID project in SLO County, projects that were made possible in large part because of the assistance that the LID initiative provided to municipalities in securing grants to support these projects. I mention this first because I think it's a concrete example of how the Central Coast LID initiative is making a difference on the ground, and I toured those facilities with staff. But it also is important to recognize that LID is still very new to the region and to date has largely been pursued voluntarily or through grant-supported efforts like these projects. We'll see more examples of LID when the post-construction requirements go into effect this coming spring. But even then, we'll continue to see projects built with no LID for some time to come because projects were approved before the post-construction requirements became effective. The LID projects waterboard staff toured are under construction, and we got a real sense of the effort local agencies must go through to complete retrofits of existing infrastructures like streets and parking lots. I believe Mr. Rock has some photos of these. So, Mr. Rock, if you would, please.
Yeah, thank you. Dominic Rock with the Water Board. And it's always appreciate the opportunity to share an update on the low-impact development program here with you. So some pictures are in order. Oh, too bad you can't see the top. It says Atascadero Zoo parking lot, and that's paid for by an urban greening grant. And the project was to construct a green parking lot adjacent to Highway 41 by planting 25 trees and installing LID features to manage stormwater. This project has a great opportunity to demonstrate two different types of permeable paving. We have two different contractors from the region using their approach in two different parts of the parking lot, so we'll have a good opportunity to sort of compare and demonstrate the effectiveness of different approaches. Projects like this, if you tour them under construction, you begin to get a good sense of what is actually underneath these surface features, and I just wanted to demonstrate here that the depth of a bioretention cell is actually considerable. If you see how the guys, it's almost up to their shoulders at the deepest point of the bioretention cell. And also, once the soil is placed in the cell and without the plants in it yet, you can see that the elevation of the drainage is higher than the ground level, so that allows for the water to back up. And that's an example of something a lot of times people don't get right. They put the drain down at the lower level and defeat some of the purpose. So that's an example of how I do it right. The Paso Robles 21st Street Green Street upgrade was also paid for through an urban greening grant, close to $1 million, or at least it was partially supported by that. This was a project to green a 5-block area with trees and understory plantings, and to daylight a culverted creek and improve stormwater capture with bioswales and bioretention cells. And here's an example of one of those cells. I think you'll see this picture again later. Here's an example of where one of the infiltration swales overflows back into the creek, and it was pointed out to us by the project manager that in these early rains this year, which granted were somewhat limited, but all of the runoff that came through this watershed never even made it out of these drains because it was being infiltrated successfully by some of these features, like the one here. So these projects really are they're great examples of how our region is benefiting from the presence and the activity of the LID initiative. And the cities will attribute much of their success in securing the funds for these projects to the assistance they got from the LID initiative. And LIDI, I call it LIDI, LID initiative, remains involved during the project implementation to make sure that the optimal value in terms of demonstration and outreach can be achieved through these projects. But again, they're examples of the project design and the outreach and education priority areas that the Lompoc Development Initiative pursues. But the initiative is also continues to take and make great strides in its third priority assistance category, which is that of local regulations. And I thought I'd give you an example, one quick example before Dr. Inglis takes the mic. And that's the example of the California Stormwater Quality Association, or CASCA's, grant to remove barriers to LID codes in local and state code. About $1 million was granted to CASCA to do this work statewide, so not all of this is coming to our region, but a substantial part of it is. So CASCA's project involves providing LID implementation to support to 25 municipalities over 2 years, giving them sample code revisions, actually in some cases directly revising their code so that they remove those barriers to low-impact development in their codes and ordinances. The team leads for the grant are Daniel Apt with RBF Consulting and Darla Inglis with the Central Coast LID Initiative. And a priority code section will be addressed in detail in each municipality that they work for. So it could be the street code or the subdivision code or the parking lot code, but it will be specifically addressed and the barriers will be identified and removed.
Dominic, the 25 municipalities, is that just in the Central Coast region?
That's
or
statewide, so statewide. There'll be fewer in our region. And the landscape code is a particular element of this grant and this project, and those will be provided, the revisions to landscape code will be provided to all the participating municipalities. I think this is a great example of how the Central Coast LID initiative has aimed to achieve its mission through this model approach of leadership and innovation, leveraging resources and partnerships, leveraging resources and achieving these partnerships. In terms of leadership and innovation, the LID initiative piloted the municipal code assistance 2 years ago in this region and developed materials to help the cities and counties modify their landscape codes. And again, these landscape codes created the nucleus for this large statewide grant. In terms of leveraging resources, by assisting CASCA in pursuing the grant funds, the initiative is bringing additional resources into the region while also bringing resources to the entire state. And in terms of partnerships, the LID initiative is partnering with CASCA, which is a strategic partnership, really, in managing this grant, but it will also forge a valuable partnership with the local government commission, which, as some of you may know, provides improved access to local decision makers who are often elected and to upper management staff at the municipalities whose support for LID is obviously essential. And, of course, the partnerships that we continue to maintain with our municipalities will be strengthened by this effort as well. So I'm available to answer questions. I think it'd probably be best to go ahead and let Darla start, and I can help afterwards.
Is Darla going to talk about the photos and the field trip that you just did?
No.
Okay.
A little bit.
Yeah. You know, what would be helpful is to know what were the conditions that prompted that location to undergo an LID project. Were they having flooding issues? Was something else going on? I mean, kind of the before and the after is always helpful to us to know.
If I could, Mr. Chair, before she talks about it, because I was on the trip, I just want to give you my impressions, how impressed I was on the projects. I mean, they're quite amazing. I'm sorry, I know you were planning to come but couldn't come, but they're very impressive projects, especially the, I believe it's the 21st Street project at Paso Robles. I mean, it's a huge, huge project. And the one impression I was left with at the end was
regardless of the water quality benefits. In the end, they're visually very pleasing projects. They really do add value to the community in terms of the way they look. They're quite nice.
You know, I think what we should be doing, we did this with the city of Santa Barbara, giving them a resolution for their McKenzie Park project. I think each year, you know, you guys, staff, should find a project that we should present a resolution to that, the Board of Supervisors or the council, because I think it further elevates this in the public view, and it recognizes good deeds, and I think we get, you know, a lot of bang for that, a lot of bang for our buck for that. And, you know, we're very good at penalizing people. We're just not as good at, I think, acknowledging in a very positive way things that they do like this. I mean, I know Steve and I have been glancing back and forth. I think we wanted to go like this, thumbs up at some point. I mean, this is great work. I mean, this is tremendous. It's so encouraging. So I don't know how the rest of you feel about this, but I think we should consider that.
Yeah, I agree.
So we need one for 2013. Okay.
And I have a general question.
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. And I totally agree with what you just said. And, of course, I've been completely supportive in every way possible of the low-impact development initiative, and I hope to continue to do that. My question is to Dominic. What is the urban greening grant? What's the total funding pool, and how much of it have we succeeded in getting, and how long is that funding source available?
I don't know. I don't know the answers to those questions. I do know that the urban greening grant wasn't one that is administered by the state water boards. So these municipalities pursued these funds independently or with assistance of LEDI, mm-hmm. but they aren't typically ones that we help foster grant applications, that kind of thing. Ironically, there are quite a few of them that did result in water quality-related projects, but mm-hmm. the greening part was the kind of the emphasis of that grant program. Mm-hmm. Darla might have some other information on that.
The urban greening grants are through the Strategic Growth Council that was set up, I want to say 4 years ago or so, to be looking broadly at sustainability issues. And the grant dollars are Prop 84 funds that are coming through that venue. And Strategic Growth Council offers planning grants as well as project-related grants, and they've recently been changing their guidelines to go into broader, more sustainability, livable communities, integrated water resource areas. So it's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Wolf.
Thank you. Before we get into the example, I had a couple of 30,000-foot elevation questions about the same elevation you used earlier. Yes, Mr. Engineer. So when we had the WQCC, there was presentation from municipalities, and they had a captive audience, and they were rather critical about LIDs in terms of their cost. So two questions. The first one, as LIDs practices become, you know, more well-developed, and we're going from the leading edge to something that becomes a little bit more routine in terms of design, is the overall cost of LID practices going down? Do we see, you know, and I'm not sure how you would quantify it, if it's on a square foot base, that mm-hmm. probably would be a good way to address it. But as we move down the road, are the cost, you know, diminishing a bit? Because one question I have, I call it sustainable economics, because right now these LID projects are really only successful because of grants. I would say that's a general comment I made, but that's probably very true. If they didn't get some funding, a lot of folks would say, I'm not interested. So as we're looking at LIDs long-term, Do we see a way to be able to further quantify and dollarize the benefits so that municipalities look at it as, all right, an engineering model saying you're going to avoid having to increase your infrastructure of storm drain by X amount, so that's going to be one of the savings you get. There are also today economic models on the value of aesthetics to, point to Mr. Chair's input. Those, I think, would help perhaps entice more projects because municipalities would see them as being, just a big cost there of being green.
That is those are good observations. I think one thing we want to clarify is that the projects that are funded through grants are often retrofit projects. So they're actually going into the existing built gray infrastructure and greening it. And that will always be an expensive endeavor because you're essentially, having to take apart an existing structure and replace it. With post-construction requirements like the ones that U-Haul recently approved, all future development will just inherently be built according to these approaches. But the retrofit, addressing that existing infrastructure, is going to remain a fairly expensive endeavor. But it will. The economic analysis of it, I think, will start to change, and you will start to get those values evaluated or commoditized even. The additional value that it has for climate change, greening, pedestrian, livability, aesthetics, the whole vast approach, array of benefits that it provides will start to start to see the benefits and some value associated with those. And then furthermore, the water quality regulations are essentially forcing municipalities to make these retrofits or to do something to address the existing infrastructure, not just the future development. And in places like Los Angeles, where they look at the approach, the various options for retrofitting, either achieving it or for meeting the water quality objectives, they're looking at comparing end-of-pipe treatment to doing something with LID or bioretention retrofitting. And I think those, when you start to compare those, the economics of LID become a lot more favorable, not everywhere, but in some cases. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the whole issue of retrofit economics is going to be evolving. It's going to remain complex, but it will always have a price tag associated with it.
Steve, did you want to add something? I wasn't quite sure. Go ahead.
As your liaison, it's highly out of procedure for me to say. I was just saying recharge. Your Paso Robles project is none of that end up in the creeks this November 20th, right? Well, where did it go? Where it's needed
in the ground
in a very acute way.
Right. And I was going to make the same comment on this 21st Street project, looking up that road, and Darla or Dominic can comment on it. This was an area that had some urban blight issues. Mm-hmm. It had infrastructure issues that needed to be repaired or replaced anyway. And it drains quite a large watershed up there. I mean, they got pretty high flows coming down the street. It basically, at some point, would surface and turn it into a small river. And it went on down to where they have their community center, their arena, where they hold the mm-hmm. fair. So by redoing this, they're recharging the water. They're upgrading the local community, and it ties into what they're trying to do with the community center. And I mean, it's a whole project. It's not just this isolated. Do you want to comment on that, Darla? Or
Darla, why don't you go ahead and start your presentation?
I can, okay. I will touch on many of these topics, including the cost. So and help me remember in some locations. So hello and thank you for having me here, Chairman Young and members of the board. One of the things, this presentation is going to focus on the 2013-2014 work plan. You received a handout that reported on the last year, and there's some really great stuff in there, but time being limited, we won't cover all of that. I did, and you were already honing in on this, I wanted to point something out about this slide. When I first came here in 2008 and started giving presentations, it was really hard to find good photos of good LID projects in the state, much less here in the region. So my photos were always from somewhere in the state, sometimes out of state. Then I would come in with the front slide, and we'd have a couple more photos of something in the state. Well, you know, from here on out, pretty much we're going to have photos that are from here in our region. And so it's really a milestone in seeing that it started, it's begun. We're kind of at that front of the curve where we're going to see projects being developed here in our region at a greater pace. It's still hard to find a lot of projects, but many of our communities are doing work, not just these urban greening grant projects. So this is a bit of a milestone. Let's see if I got this. So the work plan drivers, when we develop a work plan, we think about where we've come from. You know, we've come from starting it with basic building blocks for LID, going out to all the municipalities and giving presentations on what is LID, that kind of basic level, and really trying to bring people up to the point where there's going to be post-construction requirements and starting to get them savvy about the technical aspects, the regulatory aspects, codes, ordinances, and things like that. Additionally, we've got other drivers that are coming up that influence this year's work plan, including water quality risk, which I'll talk about a bit more, and integrated stormwater management. So I'm going to go through each of these and then note some of the things that LEADY's doing in this work plan to address these drivers. Now you're going to see a couple common photos here from Dominic and I. So the post-construction requirements, they're going to go into effect in March. And at some level of collective denial, maybe, we think of things like a rain garden. You know, you kind of go out and you dig this little hole and you put in some plants and some soil and you disconnect a downspout and there you've got yourself some LID. Well, certainly, maybe at a homeowner's level or something like that, that's just fine. Here's this picture again. But when we're talking about post-construction requirements and having to meet a numeric performance requirement with certain design specifications, you're getting into some really heavy engineering here. It's a totally different game in terms of how deep you go, the type of materials that you use. Everything is just so much different than doing some simple little rain design. Here, for example, it's what we're calling an extruded curb. If you have a bioretention area that's near a street or a parking lot, if this was a landscaped area, they would go in and compact the heck out of that thing to make sure that there is structural stability where the vehicles are going to park and nothing starts sinking in the infrastructure. Well, it's a no-no to be compacting in your bioretention area. You want to keep it fluffy, right? So that necessitates having this deeper extruded curb that kind of forms like a retaining wall, so to speak, that helps protect the structure. It's a new standard detail. The designers don't quite know how to do it. You can't just buy it. It's got to be formed in place. And in fact, when we were in Paso, here's a fellow that's doing that very thing for this extruded curb is deeper. We chatted with him. He's really proud of his work. It's an art form to put curb out like this. It really is. And it's just one aspect that makes the design so different. And it adds to the cost significantly when you start having to put things like this into your design. So in terms of cost, sometimes the LID is going to be quite costly. You may be able to look at the other benefits that come with it. You may be able to say, well, let's just look at cost in terms of I was going to have to pay X for a landscaped area here. How much additional cost are these added engineering features costing me? So we have students that are now on board with us that are starting to look at cost benefit for these projects so we can get that better understanding that you're asking about. As Dominic mentioned, you know, you fill in the soil and you've got all these elevations that you have to beat. The contractor, this is absolutely new for the contractor. They've got to get all these elevations right. They've got to make sure the overflow elevation is right. They've got to make sure that the standing water depth is within vector control parameters, and the soil has to be a certain depth, et cetera. So it gets really challenging to put this puzzle together. And I'm showing bioretention examples, but many of the same challenges are with pervious pavement and other designs. And here's that same photo where we were at the at Paso Robles with Ken and Michael and the stormwater team, Lisa. And, you know, longitudinal, you have to be thinking about you're moving water down. You don't want to erode sediment out and become a sediment source. So these contractors and designers are on such a learning curve. And yet it's amazing to see that it's being done, that we have examples of good projects. The other challenging thing in this region is that This is specified soil, and we can't get it here in our region right now. So we're going to have constraints on materials that are specified. So on the Paso project, they pulled it in from a vendor outside of Oakland. On the Atascadero project, they did have Airvol Block, which is a local firm, mix stuff together, but it was kind of an ad hoc sort of thing that they did for a large project. Little projects, groups aren't going to want to mix soil. So we're really trying to figure out how do we get materials. Aggregate is another one, the specific type of aggregate that is called for under pervious pavement and under bioretention, not necessarily readily available here. There's some work to get it. Monica.
Thank you. Specified soil. So what is involved with determining it at a specific site, what that specified soil, what the constituents are for specified soil or aggregate? I mean, how does it vary, or is it a one formula for it? It, for a certain kind of drainage, or what determines what?
The design stays the same. So the bioretention system, for example, the function of it will have an aggregate, a specified aggregate, no matter where you're at in the state or even at a state, and a specified bioretention soil. And they work together. So the bioretention soil has to have properties that are going to allow the stormwater runoff to infiltrate, because we're trying to infiltrate. It has to go slow enough for pollutant removal properties. If it goes through too fast, you're not going to get some of that ionic exchange and the like. And it can't stay there too long because you'll kill your plants. Then you go below that layer into the aggregate, and that helps to give you more void space, so you get more retention and then hopefully more than infiltration into that native soil. So the specification that we developed with Leedy is an improvement on some that are out there right now, but it's sort of the standard across the state. Yeah. So people who make these special mixes are in high demand. If any of you need any business ventures, bioretention soil is the place to go.
For us. Did you hear that?
I'm just thinking of, especially in the Salinas area, where we have extremely hard pans and a collection of like bioswells that are percolating down and saturating the soils, and then now they're coming back up. Mm-hmm. We haven't had that recently because we haven't had any rain. Mm-hmm. But historically, we've had problems in the Salinas area with water saturating the soil and saturating it so much it runs off. Mm-hmm. And I know Dominic said that additional cost is more on when you go to remodel or change the property that's already established. But new construction, there's a tremendous additional cost, especially in the Salinas area, because of that hard pan and using bioswales and other types of materials. What kind of recommendations do you use for those, especially Salinas? Because Salinas has unique problems in certain parts of the city.
Mm-hmm. So the designers do look at the native soil conditions, and certainly a clay soil versus a sandy soil is going to give you an absolutely different level of constraints. So the existing soil condition is pretty much going to define the size of the facility that would meet the regulatory post-construction requirement. And if the soil is so bad that the sizing would take up the entire site, to my understanding, the post-construction requirements have off-ramps to where if you have a very poor soil, you have to try, you have to try infiltration, retention to a certain percentage of the site, and then you're not expected to try to work that native soil anymore because it's naturally a soil that does not infiltrate at a rate that a sandy soil would. So it's in the design process and in the regulations that I believe there's an acknowledgement of those poor native soils, so that it's not held to the designs are not held to the same standards as a different site. But you still try to use the same functional processes in the design to achieve it. You just may be more limited and more constrained. And I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Well, it does to a certain extent, but I'll just bring it a little closer to home. My son is a car dealer in Salinas, just built a new facility 3 years ago. Bought almost 5 acres of land. Used about 1 acre of his land for bioswales. So the cost, when you're paying, you know, $250,000 an acre for property, and then you have to turn it around and use that amount for bioswales, and that's where the escalated the cost brings up. The soils in that particular area is not good. They get saturated, but they do have a collection system for overflow that goes into ponds with aeration. So that makes up the rest of their retention portion of it. And of course, you know, I more and looked at that simply because it's my son. I don't have any financial interest in it, but it's just interesting that I'm sitting here and making requirements, you know, through this board and thinking about how LID can work but not financially strap a particular project that it now doesn't become feasible financially to do. And so I think there has to be a balance, and I always look at, you know, there's always a cost to something, and that has to be built into your business program to make that particular project work. The bioswales are working fantastically. It's doing the job. But my question is that, and I get hit this from the Salinas leaders, because I live in the city of Salinas constantly, and the construction people, that this is doing more harm financially for them to not make some of these projects work. So consequently, they're not doing the project in Salinas, and Salinas is losing business, and they're moving elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm looking at, you know, maybe I'm wearing my old mayor's hat, thinking about how do you make a city work, and you have to have economy to finance municipalities, but yet you don't want to run your businesses off by putting so many overburdened costs to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think the sensitivity that we have is to work with those individuals to make sure that we do not put them out of business.
I agree. I think one of the first bitter pills are stormwater controls, period, regardless of LID, because stormwater control comes with a cost regardless of what type of technique you're going to use. And so can we develop techniques to minimize the bitterness of that pill by having options that are more cost effective, but certainly they're a cost. I'm not familiar with Salinas in terms of folks moving out. I haven't worked yet with a community where businesses truly did leave because of the stormwater requirements, usually because wherever they were going to go, there were stormwater requirements as well. But it's definitely a burden. It's a cost that there didn't used to be a cost for stormwater.
Well, there's no question. Don't get me wrong. The benefit of the LID is extremely important, and I think it's working its function, but I think we have to be, my point is, we have to be sensitive, and there has to be some equal balance of what we're asking these people to do, because it all boils down to cost, whether it's going to work or not work. And loss of land for whether it's a car dealer or whether it's a Macy's or a Penny's or any other type of facilities or an office building. If it doesn't pan out where you have to, you know, use a lot of your parking facilities for collection, and now they don't meet the requirements for parking spaces for the size of footprint of the building that they intended to build, then sometimes it doesn't work out financially as a business project.
Right, and we run into those kinds of issues all the time on these different street parking lot projects. Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead, Darla. Okay. Why don't you continue?
You're
with
all getting hungry. You're
sleeping.
That's right. But if we're not going to get back here by one, and also have lunch, but Let's try to
power through.
Okay.
So in regards to the driver for the post-construction requirements, what is LEEDY going to do? We are going to do a soil infiltration analysis, so we can be talking about that native soil condition and to understand it better and have methodologies. One would think there's a methodology out there already, but there's not. And so with Earth Systems, we recently developed a methodology so that the geotechs and designers can better understand how to design correctly the facility. We're going to keep helping with design and construction assistance. We get calls on everything from the soil to those curbs to slopes, et cetera. We're on call for that type of work. Plan review. I've looked at a couple subdivision plans recently where plan reviewers at the municipalities are saying, okay, I know these LID requirements are coming in, and somebody submitted something. How am I supposed to be looking at this? I don't know if I'm looking at this correctly. So we do that kind of work. And then we're working with the city of Watsonville. Alternative compliance is when you cannot meet your compliance on site for a project, and if you're allowed the mechanism through the regulation, it's where you meet that compliance off site. It sounds simple, but it involves a legal agreement. It involves a technical basis surrounding the parameters for equivalency, making sure you're mitigating at an equivalent level, and funding mechanisms like a fee in lieu. So we're creating this alternative compliance for Watsonville, which we believe the rest of the municipalities in the region will be able to use. And then we are also keep going with our training and outreach materials, including trying to get more vendors and materials and information out there to help people who are now going to be building these projects starting in March, if not sooner. I keep going the wrong way. Okay, now I want to talk about the other drivers, water quality risk and the existing and future impacts. So here's a map that Larry Harlan nicely did for me, and it just says Region 3, no cities on it, 101. And these kind of orange areas are the urban areas. So these are the areas that we've already developed that already have impacts. And so you know what they look like. They've got streets and they've got parking lots, and they're contributing pollutants and flows. And so one of the areas that we want to do work is to go back into those areas and help with retrofitting, dealing with those legacy conditions before water quality regulations were in place. So one area for retrofits where we're doing support is grant implementation support. Both Ecology Action and the Coastal San Luis RCD got grants to implement small-scale low-impact development in their areas of influence. And they're asking for help from LEEDY to just help bring up their own internal expertise more so that they can be more powerful in how they deliver these grants. And we're welcome to do that and help them become stronger and, you know, build that internal knowledge. So I put a little clip here. This should look familiar since this is the building we're in right here. One example is for Ecology Action. They need to go out and find good locations for LID best management sites. And so they're really excited about streets and parking lots, which is wonderful, but they don't quite have the eye yet of what to look for in a street or parking lot. So this is our parking lot right here. You see all this open space, and then there's landscaped areas in between where the cars park. So when you go outside, take a look at that. The picture's a little fuzzy, but can you tell me why you think this may not be a good site for doing a bioretention type, you know, kind of vegetated landscape project? This would be a project that if I was looking at landscape bioretention type fixes, I would immediately take it off my list. Any?
The way the surface of the parking lot is structured, you've got, you know, this channel that is directing water, and where it's actually headed is not going to go
absolutely
into any kind of, yeah.
So Monica got it. So many of our newer parking lots, now notice this when you drive around now, wherever you go, you'll see that parking lots are generally graded to take the flows into the center. If you wanted to move water into that open area that's there, or if you thought, wow, we can just take some of these landscaped areas that are already there and take water to it, it's not going to happen. You'd have to tear up the entire parking lot. So we're putting together some technical assistance so that we can help those who are looking for LID locations have a better eye.
But you could put a sump pump.
You could if you wanted to have the cost for that and the maintenance for that. You could.
1/8 of a horsepower, mm-hmm. 120 volt flow switch.
There you go. And somebody to come out to check it.
I'll help you wire it.
And for every parking lot like it. So this site might be better for some pervious pavement, and then we get into some more cost. But, you know, there's probably another parking lot that grades perfectly to a landscaped area. Okay, let's see. Then, for retrofits, we're also helping in developing grants. And this is where we go to a community and try to help them because we know that they don't have resources to develop and get money in. So while loans are wonderful, they're hard to repay, so getting actual grant money is great. So the city of Gonzales is one where we developed the Prop 84 grant. And the city of Gonzales, especially in the Old Town, has all these nice wide streets so you can do things there. And even these vegetated and, well, that are not vegetated, landscaped areas. So we put in a grant proposal, to do 18 curb bulb extensions in the Old Town Gonzales, which means that the curb would be removed and it would be extended and water would flow into a vegetated bioretention area. Multiple 18 of these in Old Town Gonzales. And we went through a process of trying to work with a disadvantaged community. We started in Pajaro and just kind of technically trying to find the best site and leadership within the community. We landed in the city of Gonzales. The other community that we've helped with a grant proposal for Prop 84 is City of Santa Maria. This is the Blosser area, and I think I've got the watershed line a bit wrong, but it's about 1,200 acres of light commercial and homes that runs untreated into the Santa Maria River. So the way a lot of detention ponds work, they have a flood control basin. And in a flood control basin, in most conventional design, you don't want those little flows in your basin. You want your basin solely for those large flows to be managing floods. So oftentimes, small flows are routed around and out to the receiving water. And the small flows are the ones that we're concerned about because it has all the pollutants, and annually, it's actually the most amount of flow. So we've put in a proposal to capture these flows, small flows that are being directed to the Santa Maria River, into an infiltration LID type basin. And this community here also qualifies as a disadvantaged community under the Prop 84 guidelines. So we had emphasis there. I keep going the wrong way, sorry folks. But now those were existing impacts, and I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about future impacts. And I'm back to this map that I showed earlier. There's something really interesting to me about this map. I was highlighting where the growth areas are at, but in actuality, it's what you don't see that is most important to us. We have, along 101, we have several small communities, limited resources, they don't have LID expertise, and it's mostly in the northern part of our region. So these are the Soledad, Gonzales, Greenfield, Gilroy, King City, and some in our south part of the region as well. They tend to be in the lower economic bracket by medium household income, so several of them also qualify for disadvantaged communities. Many discharged water bodies that are already impaired. And these communities are going to see incredible growth in the next 10 years. I started contacting these communities because I thought LEDI needs to start giving some resources to these small communities that don't show up at these meetings. They don't show up to conferences. They're really needing help, more so even than the rest of our communities. And when I started talking to them, I was blown away by the thousands of acres of new development that's going to be occurring. These are the plans that got put on the shelf when the economy tanked, and they're now getting dusted off. So Gonzales, they're dusting off plans for, I think it's almost 2,000 acres of subdivision. King City's got 400 acres. You start adding these up and you start thinking about future water quality impact, we should be putting effort in these communities. And what we don't want to see for these communities is the conventional urbanization, right? Our conventional urbanization has devalued riparian and green areas. We get all that high impervious area that we know is detrimental to our receiving waters, and you get all these systems of pipes, vaults, and ponds. Additionally, these communities have written into, I looked at their general plans, they're trying to figure out how not to become bedroom communities for Salinas. People are driving from King City to San Jose. How can they retain any of the charm that they have? A lot of them obviously have this real agricultural heritage. So they're trying to figure out how to do this. How are they going to grow in a sustainable manner? And they don't have any resources. So as Dominic mentioned from our Prop 84 grant, I spoke with the city of Gonzales about their interest in street standards. So many of you have heard me talk before, streets and parking lots. You know, if I could hit anything comprehensively in this region, streets and parking lots carry the most runoff, highest amount of pollutants. If we could get sustainable streets in as not a voluntary, but it becomes the default design, we would go a long way in protecting our watersheds as we develop. And so Gonzales is game. They thought about it, and they said, okay, we will do this. We will partner, and we will take advantage of this offer. And furthermore, they said, because we meet with some of the other communities, we've been trying to talk about shared services, we think we can leverage their participation so that they would adopt the same exact street standards. So I know we're kind of tight on time, but I am so excited about this that I can't even barely contain myself. This is going to be really, really big for this region, and I have not yet seen in California a small community take on the green complete streets. You know, LA has, San Mateo. This is a big deal.
Does this go beyond our LID requirements?
This would go, it would ensure that you would have the LID requirements, that the streets would allow a compliance with the post-construction requirements, but it's going to go further in the sense of things like climate change, or where you want to get, or you want to deal with heat island effects, you want to get more plants, you want to get more trees. Maybe you're in an area where you want to have a lot more infiltration because of your groundwater supply issue. So it's intended to be more comprehensive than that.
I guess my question really is, in any community in our region that has to comply with our LID regulations, this would put in 1,000 acres of development.
Oh, I see.
They would have to comply with something we have on the books right now.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And what you see...
Unless they were
approved before, correct. But what you see is if the beauty of having something standardized, street standard, is that there's a consistency, a conformity, and you have a higher chance of actually meeting those objectives that you have. Otherwise, you're hitting it kind of piecemeal. You're trying to shove in pervious pavement or bioretention sort of after the fact, and it's a lot more effort, maybe not for as much environmental benefit, and certainly probably not superior benefit. So where you can get this in is a huge thing for that community. And I think, you know, the leadership for Gonzales, I just have to mention, it's really hard now to work and do things in the street. So the biggest difference in these two pictures is obviously the shading. I mean, so heat island effect type issues. The picture on the left is Gilroy, older neighborhood, pre-218, back in the times when you could plant trees in the public right-of-way and there were funds to maintain those trees. Most of our communities in this region, and I'm not thinking of San Luis Obispo or Paso, you know, folks that have a bit more money, what you mostly see in the newer subdivisions is no vegetation in the right-of-way. And why is that?
Cost.
They don't have any money to maintain it. So they put the trees over onto the private property. They kind of have these loose agreements that the private property owner will maintain those trees. Oftentimes they get cut down, but it's not being put in the right-of-way. So when you have a community like a Gonzales or any of our communities that are saying, okay, I am going to take the leap of faith to embrace street standards that are complete green streets, it's a big deal because they're going to have to figure out how to maintain that in the future. Okay, faster. We'll move faster now. The last category here. Integrated stormwater management. I just thought I'd put this glum-looking guy on here, Descartes, who is theoretically responsible for the mechanistic view of the world, when we pull everything apart, because we thought if we pull everything apart, we can really understand everything really well. And he just wasn't very good about putting it back together. So what we end up with in our world, and Stephen was managing and talking about this, here's all our lovely silos related to stormwater. And certainly there are more silos than that. But we can blame that guy, we can blame Descartes for this mess that we're in. But what we want to do is, we're all saying we want to think smarter about this. And stormwater, in the sense, let's look at water supply. There's a huge delivery cost in water supply that costs a lot of money in energy. Most of the cost of water, especially like for Southern California, is delivering water, energy. Depending on how you're getting that energy, there may be CO2 emissions, you're impacting climate. In some places, they're getting smart. They're using their stormwater, big cisterns, for their indoor water supply needs, so they're not making such a demand on the water supply. They're decreasing the energy demand and decreasing the CO2 emissions. Around here, we're talking a lot about, well, stormwater should be a resource, and right now, we're not treating it like that. And we should be using it, for example, to be recharging our aquifers for agriculture, for drinking water, and et cetera. So we just need to be thinking smart about this. How we manage stormwater is crucial. So I just wanted, this is the second to last slide, I believe. I just want to show you, maybe it's not a task item, but it's how we look at how we do our work with Leedy. So Gonzales, I was telling you about that project. All these curb bulb extensions that we're planning are in this blue area. There are a few different spots in the city where we could have done this. But the city is very concerned about their aquifer. And we chose an area. This green area is very highly infiltrative soils. We're going to work this thing. If we get the grant, I'm getting ahead of myself because I think it's so great. We would really push to infiltrate, treat and infiltrate as highly as possible to try to also meet their objective for groundwater recharge. Similarly, this project for Santa Maria, this is very highly infiltrative soil. And if we work it correctly, I'm being told that we can infiltrate almost half the water that currently runs out of this basin, just runs out to the river. We can actually get it into the aquifer. Santa Maria also has very grave water supply concerns. So it's how we're thinking about all these projects. And just taking those opportunities. Paso Robles, at the downstream end, they had very highly infiltrative soils, so infiltrative that the bioretention soil would have actually been a constraint to infiltrating. So what you see instead is more of an infiltration trench where you're getting water quality treatment before. So these are just a few examples of how we're going to start thinking smarter and actually move into a tangible realm of integrating these different resources.
Darla, What is that slide going to look like, you think, in 10 years?
I think in 10 years, it'll be vegetated. The city's got, you know, the city will have has money to do good landscaping, so I think it'll look good. I think I'm wondering what those cobbles will look like. I am not a huge fan of cobbles because of sediment getting into them. And then they're really hard to maintain, and they kind of block up your infiltration ability. But because there's pretreatment up here before this, I'm hoping they're going to be able to maintain the sediment load to keep this trench moving. And what they're intending to do is change out. They've done the width. They thought ahead of time with their machinery that if they need to scoop that out and replace it, they'll do that.
So if water-loving plants grew there, that would be a bad thing in the cobble center?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can't see it. That's not dirt. That is a, like a jute fabric.
It's like a netting.
That's just right there right now.
On
that's
top of dirt, right?
Yeah, but that is not dirt right there.
It'll be planted.
And it's a buried cistern, essentially a gravel-packed HDPE pipe with perforations in it underneath all that.
How deep is the soil underneath the jute matting?
Oh, I don't know.
2 feet? 1 foot?
I want to say, you know, they were doing things big there, so I want to say probably a minimum of 3, not deeper.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Darla, in the end, what we'll see, ideally, we would see vegetated banks and the cobble strip would maintain as the main infiltration area?
Correct.
Okay.
With some of the infiltration happening upstream more, with some of the rest of the designs and the water quality treatment, because we want to be very cognizant of not shooting pollutants down into the aquifer.
So just for your reference, this is at the end of the 21st Street project.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're looking down towards the river, and if you turned around and looked up, you have multiple other infiltration areas upstream. Mm-hmm. So this is the last stop for whatever doesn't get infiltrated mm-hmm. above this project. Is that right?
That's correct. They had the luxury of doing a treatment train because of the length of the street. Okay, last slide. I just always have to mention, in the annual report, you may have seen all the students that we're working with, doing a lot more work with students now. They're the ones that are going to be on the forefront of actually making this work happen. I'm contacted by faculty often that say, my students are ahead of me on this, and can you come and lecture? Can you help me build curriculum into my courses? And so we've been doing a lot of that type of work. In this particular case, this is a lecture that I gave out at the Octagon Barn. I helped the Land Conservancy and SLO County put in for a Prop 84 grant. So the Land Conservancy got help. The students put in ideas to the Land Conservancy. The students learned about LID, and so did the faculty member. And then this student, Matt Sales, approached me afterwards and really wanted to do something. He's the one that did the work for the disadvantaged community trying to go through southern Monterey County and find a good project site to work with, and that was the start for our City of Gonzales grant. So it all kind of starts working together that way. And Chairman Young, I want to echo your words. You know, we want to positively acknowledge all these good efforts. This is a learning curve. There's no doubt there are going to be mistakes. And we just want to keep people encouraged, keep them going. And I think while we've got projects like 21st Street and the Atascadero Zoo that are big, go to Morro Bay, to Taco Bell. City of Morro Bay had a bioattention area put in front of Taco Bell, and they did a pretty darn good job. And so, you know, to me, sometimes it's that willingness to make that leap and do it is as important as the project itself. So we have all sorts of good examples coming up in the region, and some of those small ones are just as important as some of the big ones. So we're going to keep, I think we need to come up with some sort of a LEADY award kind of deal.
Good.
And that's it, right, all through your lunch hour. My apologies.
So before we, I just want to say I'm so impressed with what Darla and Dominic and everyone has done. I mean, when you go out and see these projects, they truly are amazing, and I think you are seeing the future. They're doing a really wonderful job. And, in fact, the State Water Board is starting a strategic plan for the stormwater program, and Phil Hammer has volunteered to work on that for the next 6 months, starting in January. And they will include in that strategic plan a lot of what you're seeing here in terms of trying to move the rest of the state. See, he's nodding his head. Trying to move the rest of the state towards what we and Liddy are doing here in the region. So I just thank you, congratulations. And I wanted to suggest, if you are looking for an information item sometime, Steve, that maybe inviting Darla to come up and give a presentation. I think the state board members would really be interested in seeing what's going on.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, hold on one second. Oh, Michael, go ahead.
Oh, I just had a comment on just to follow up on the 21st Street project.
Okay, go ahead. And then we'll go down here to Mr. Jordan. We'll come
I just
down.
Wanted to let you know that towards the end of the tour, something I thought was pretty remarkable that happened was the engineer for the city of Paso Robles, who's responsible for the 21st Street project, he took Dominic aside and was showing him maps of the city. And he had highlighted at various places around the city where they were planning on doing more of the same. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Remember a few years ago when we were talking to municipalities about this and how they were fighting it tooth and nail. Now you have the person coming up to Dominic, who was responsible for that project, including its cost overruns, doing it anyway, and showing him where we are going to be, where they are going to do this throughout the city. It's extraordinary.
Great. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you. So kind of along that lines, I just want to make sure that I would also heartily endorse
an award or series of awards, and not just an award, but I think you've talked about some other categories too, especially emerging communities. If you could have maybe categories of awards, so you had a real award. It's one thing to parade in front of the Santa Barbara City Council and basically be talking to the choir. You know, you can go other places, Salinas apparently, and have a little more difficulty, but maybe some categories. One would be emerging, and the other would be just what Michael was talking about too, you know, the former grudgingly dragged into it, required to do it guy who now believes award, so that you're constantly reinforcing.
Can you quote that?
No, you can't use that one. But you're constantly reinforcing not the ones who get it and do it, but also the other ones who didn't know about it before and the ones who didn't like things about it and
yes,
came along too.
Yeah, okay. That's a great idea. Thank you.
I think that's called the Convert Award, right?
Convert Award. Okay, quickly, questions, because we got a break for lunch immediately. Very quick.
I don't have a question. I have just a comment.
Okay, quick.
Okay. What I want to point out is how holistic this framework is, because what we see linking in is not only goals that we have in mind for stormwater and how the LID plays into that, but bringing students in who, you know, link into education, you're developing curriculum. These are putting together a set of issues that people see the potential for it, but very often these linkages don't get made. And there's a very practical side of this, and then there's also this kind of policy and vision. And I know, for example, PASO has a long-term vision for improving the quality of life. They want to see a community growth plan that includes these very visually and aesthetically and environmentally beneficial elements to the growth that they see for their community. And that's, I think that is what you just inform me of, is that other communities along the 101 corridor are moving in that direction, and I think that's why CASCA is getting involved as well. I think that's the trend. So I appreciate the leadership on this. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board comments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Dr. Wolf.
And I'll be very brief.
Okay.
As always.
Okay.
What is a question? Do you have a monitoring program for success stories? Because, okay, we put these in place, but how do they perform during storm? And I think the best way to have converts is showing it works. So do you have an ongoing monitoring program?
For several of the projects, we've put in a qualitative monitoring where you match up rain gauge data and certain size storm events that were supposed to be your storm event target and go out and observe and see whether or not that it infiltrated and it worked. We don't have maybe the more classic monitoring where you might have somebody out there with sampling, ISCO samplers and water quality parameters. We don't have, back to resources, we do not have a lot of storm water monitoring services in this region that go out and do those, because it's always going to rain at 3 a.m. on a Saturday. So we're trying to, so that's another resource we're trying to build in the region. And until that time, we're working more with quasi-quantitative type monitoring.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And then last quick comment is, I think it was René Descartes who said, do not always rely on gravity. I made that up, but it sounds good. And the reason I say that is that in Europe, in many locations, they do have, you know, a little pump. Mm-hmm. And it's called value engineering, rather than always trying to rely on gravity. You know, you have a little holding basin, pump it, put it in a good place for use, and, you know, you can see these, downtown Paris and many other cities. Mm-hmm. So everything I've seen here is right now is gravity based. So I don't know, maybe that's
the Santa Maria is definitely going to use a pump. Need a pump. But I take your point. You know, we don't want to throw out all the great conventional engineering methods out with the bathwater and just move completely to LID. The best designs are often going to be a mix.
Yeah, because, with value engineering, you put a pump and maybe you have great benefits, 100 yards away without having to go through a whole bunch of backfill and reshaping the road. So
absolutely.
Anyway,
yeah.
But great job.
Thank you.
Okay.
If you go to Paris to tour any of these demonstration projects, I'm on that list, please.
Okay. I think our chair would second that.
We're going to Paris. Right, can we go to Paris and look at these places?
Of course. Yeah.
First
okay,
one.
You okay. Guys. Hey, Darla and Dominic, thank you.
You're welcome.
Great news, great report. Makes you feel good, Steve, you know? We're going to get there eventually. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we try to get back here by 1:30? Is that, can we eat in a half hour, Ken?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.